With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It covers college basketball, the NBA draft, golf sometimes when it happens to come to Tulsa, Oklahoma. It does a little bit of everything. It's my colleague and friend Kyle Boone. Make him the big interview.
Award-winning writers, athletes, coaches, the biggest names in sports. It's the Gary Parrish Show Big Interview, presented by The Wing Guru, online at thewingguru.com.
Strong Joe, I mentioned you cover golf. You did at least last weekend. PGA Championship was in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Do you like covering golf? Do you like being out at the golf course?
I do, yeah. It's a sport that, like, I played in high school, and I actually tried to walk on in college because I thought I was good, and I was actually not good. But like, golf is fun to me, and so, like, I really like basketball and covering basketball, but covering golf is just like kind of second nature. And so that was the first time, like, being inside the ropes, actually covering an event on the PGA Tour live, which was super fun. I know if you watch it from home, it's like, it's very easy to follow, but actually being out on the course was super challenging because there's so much going on. Like, you have no idea who's leading, exactly what's happening. And I actually got to see the playoff with Will Zalatoris and Justin Thomas. That was fun. But for the most part, like, when you're walking the course, you just have no idea, like, who's leading, what the score is. And it made me appreciate, I think, my CBS colleagues a little bit more, just watching on TV, knowing how difficult it is to cover, especially from a television perspective.
No, you've got that exactly right. Like, every year, obviously, we have an event here in Memphis at TPC Southwind, and somebody will, you know, ask, and, you know, inevitably somebody will be like, hey, you going to the golf tournament? I'm thinking about going to the golf tournament. Should I go to the golf tournament? And I say, what do you want to do? You want to go to the golf tournament, or do you want to watch golf? Because, like, yep. if you want to watch golf, you should just stay home and watch it on television. But if you want to go to the golf tournament and experience it, then yeah, it's a great time. But it is, like you said, very difficult to keep up with when you're actually out on the course, because you don't know, because things are happening everywhere, and obviously you can only see what's in front of you. You said something interesting there, that you tried to walk on or thought about walking on as a golfer in college. Like, isn't golf something you should know, because it's such an individual sport? You should know before you try to walk on whether you're good enough to do that, right? Like, I remember, because this is something different, I played ping pong growing up. Actually, I had a ping pong table in my home. And I would only play against, like, friends of mine from the neighborhood. And I was better than most of them, if not all of them. So I thought I was good at ping pong, because every time I played, I won. And then I remember, like, going to Fox and Hound or something, and they got a ping pong table there, and I'm, like, probably trying to show out in front of somebody, and I'm like, yeah, I got next game, I'm going to play this guy. And I played some guy, and I realized, oh, wow, I'm not good at all. I thought I was very good, but I just got smoked by this other human. Turns out I'm not good at all. But golf, like, because you're really just competing against yourself in some ways, shouldn't you know whether you're good enough to play college golf or not before you even step on the campus?
Yeah, I actually got a scholarship to, like, a Division II school in Kansas to play golf, and turned it down because I wanted to stay in the state. And I thought, hey, I can walk on and just be, like, you know, like, the 10th guy on the bag, and then I would probably never play tournaments. Like, I'm just basically paying my own college, and I can technically be on the golf team. I thought that would be cool. Turns out I wasn't actually taking it that seriously. I actually missed the golf tryouts entirely for walk-ons, And at that point, I'm like, well, I probably wouldn't have made the team anyway, and I would have almost certainly been, like, the worst player, especially on, a really good college golf team. So just decided, basically, just that's kind of how my college golf career ended, before it really ever began.
Talking to Kyle Boone here from CBS Sports. He's on Twitter, at Kyle. Is it the double underscore Boone?
It is, yeah. I've got a squatter on the single underscore, so I'm living that double underscore life.
That's, yeah, right. At Gary Parrish is a preacher in Honolulu, Hawaii. I actually tried to reach out. I reached out to him, you know, and I was like, hey, I'll buy at Gary Parrish from you, and no response. He doesn't even really tweet. Every once in a while, he'll tweet something, but, like, most of his mentions are people thinking it's me. So, like, you'll go to at Gary Parrish, and people are like, why do you hate Duke? And this preacher in Honolulu is probably like, I don't even know what Duke is. Let's talk NBA draft. It is coming up next. First off, it'll be here. This even snuck up on me a little bit. It's less than a month away.
Yeah, it's wild. It's wild. The lottery has already happened, right? The combine just wrapped up. Now we're waiting, I guess, for, you know, kind of the final decisions to be made from some of these prospects who are kind of maybe on the fence about whether to come back to school or to stay in the NBA draft. But, yeah, we're like basically 3 months out from the NBA draft. It has definitely snuck up on me.
Just about everybody has Chet Holmgren, Jabari Smith, Paolo Banchero in some order going 1, 2, and 3. But if you look at enough mock drafts, you can find just about any order. Is this the most wide open it's been in recent years for a number one overall pick, or does it just feel that way but it's not actually?
I think it has felt that way for a while, just because I think, and we've talked about this before, is that with this draft specifically, it felt like fit more so than in most years would really kind of go a long ways, or maybe the most, towards determining kind of who's going to end up going number one. I thought before the lottery, there was a clear top four, and Jaden Ivey, Jabari Smith, Chet Holmgren, Paolo Banchero could reasonably end up going number one. Now it feels, with the lottery order already set, Magic picking number one, Thunder number two, Rockets number three, I'm not sure I would wager a ton of money, but I would feel pretty confident right now projecting Jabari Smith is going to end up going number one, Chet number two, and then Paolo number three, just based off of fit, just based off, you know, early intel and how we, at least for now, feel like some of those teams are going to be picking based off roster fit and kind of their own specific team preferences. But, yeah, it does feel like we're finally getting some clarity. That being said, I don't think until draft night I'm going to be totally sold that, you know, the Magic are going to pass on Chet Holmgren, or they're definitely leaning towards Jabari Smith. So it does feel, even though we're getting some sort of clarity, it does still feel like there's a lot still up in the air with respect to the top of this draft.
So if you say, I think Jabari Smith is the best prospect in this draft, nobody calls you an idiot. If you say, I think Paolo Banchero is the best prospect in this draft, nobody calls you an idiot. But if you say, I think Chet Holmgren is the best prospect in this draft, there are a lot of people who call you an idiot and call him Sean Bradley and call him a bust and say his body's not going to translate or hold up, that he's a center who won't be able to guard in space. He's going to be a role player at best. And people will say this despite, I think, the fact that some very smart NBA people believe that he has the highest upside in this draft and should be the number one pick in this draft. How do you balance all those things out? Talk me through Chet Holmgren.
The thing with Chet, and I think this is something that people are having a hard time with, is you look at the body type, and it just doesn't look like he would be the best prospect in the draft. He doesn't look like he'd be an NBA player, frankly. So he's 7 foot tall, but, you know, he's just under 200 pounds. And so you look at the body type and you try and do some player comps, and I've had to do some player comps, and you're like, well, who's this guy's NBA comp? Because, like, Kristaps Porzingis, I guess, you know, from a physical standpoint is a similar comp, but they don't really play in the same way that, Chet doesn't play the same way that Kristaps Porzingis does. And so you get kind of hung up on the fact that you think that, okay, well, Porzingis had a significant knee injury and he really hasn't been the same. Guys that size typically don't hold up well. And I think people get so hung up on the fact that, what, you know, the what ifs of, okay, what if this guy just can't physically hold up to the grind of an NBA season? What if he's just too skinny? What if, what if, what if? And I think people don't fully appreciate that he's good right now. Like, you have to appreciate what he can bring to the table as an NBA prospect. He was, last season, he was 94th percentile in defensive situations around the basket. He was top 10 as a true freshman at Gonzaga, a team that was the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament in block rate, 99th percentile, so one of the very best and most efficient in offensive situations around the basket. So he's really just an efficient two-way player who I think can be a true defensive anchor, a guy who really affects things on the defensive end. And I think if you're projecting him long-term, you're hoping that on the offense, he's gonna be able to come around as well, because he really kind of only scratched the surface in terms of what he can be on Gonzaga. But you know, I think the hang up ultimately is people just have a really hard time looking at a guy who is 7 foot tall and like 195 pounds and thinking that this is the best prospect in the draft.
Talking to Kyle Boone from CBS Sports. You've got Jalen Duren in your mock draft, former Memphis center, going 13th overall. What do you like, what do you not like about Jalen Duren as an NBA player?
Well, I like the athleticism, first of all. I know the Memphis crowd it can absolutely appreciate that. He's a guy who can play above the rim. He's a really good shot blocker. A good lob threat. I have him number 13 in my latest mock draft, just because I know that Charlotte is looking to upgrade its front court. LaMelo Ball could really use a lob threat. Jalen Duren is exactly that. He's bouncy. He's springy. He's a guy who's going to finish above the rim. Can play both ways. There's definitely some knocks to him and some drawbacks. You know, he's not a guy who I don't think is going to be a real floor spacer. From what we saw at Memphis, you know, the decision making when he has the ball in his hands, like, you're just hoping that he goes straight up with it or immediately passes it out, because I don't think he's really going to be a passer or a playmaker at the NBA level. And that's fine, you know, for a guy who's 6'11" and plays the center position. You don't necessarily need that from him. But, you know, I think if you're concerned about Jalen Duren as well, you're kind of hoping that he's going to develop a shot, because really inside the arc is where he lives. He's not a guy who's pulling up from the elbow and knocking down shots. So you're hoping kind of the offensive game will translate as well. He's somewhat one-dimensional and a little bit predictable at times, but, you know, the athleticism, the shot blocking timing, the way he can play on both ends of the floor, just above the rim, a guy who I think is going to be an early impact guy, even if, you know, he's just a lob threat and a shot blocker in the NBA.
So Jalen Duren was a meaningful player at Memphis in his freshman season. Josh Minot was not, but he's still in the NBA draft and creating some legitimate buzz. Can you envision a scenario where Josh Minot actually, you know, sneaks into the first round?
I absolutely can. Josh Minot is a guy who appears to be rising as this draft process continues to unfold. He's a guy who was not on my radar for most of the college basketball season, but there were some guys in draft circles who, you know, kind of put a pin in it. Like, Josh Minot is pretty interesting. And, you know, the counting stats, they were just okay, right? You know, he's averaging under 10 points per game. He's basically a part-time player for Memphis. But the physical frame and the athleticism is, I think, what has caught the eyes of NBA executives and decision makers. He's 6'8", really long defender, really athletic, a guy who I think, you know, can play on the wing, which is super valuable. And the shot is able to come around, which, you know, based off what we saw at Memphis, is a legitimate question. You know, then I think he could be a real difference maker. He's a guy who I think could end up slipping into the first round in this draft, and then people say, whoa, like, where did this come from? And then in a few years, now I get it. He's still a little bit raw. He's still a little bit of a developmental prospect. But, you know, if you're an NBA team picking in the late 20s or the early 30s, thinking 3-4 years down the road, what can this guy be? I think he could be one of the biggest steals in this draft. And so there's a lot of mystery surrounding Josh Minot, I think for good reason. The physicality, the frame, what he can be in a few years, I think has him rising up a lot of NBA draft big boards right now.
So as of this moment, two other Tigers remain in the NBA draft while maintaining their college eligibility, DeAndre Williams and Lester Quinones. I think I know the answer to this question. Either one of them have any shot of being picked if they stayed in the draft?
I mean, everyone's got a shot, but I don't think either of them are very likely to be picked. Like, they're really good college players, and I think you would agree with this. They're really good college players. They really produced at Memphis. Neither of them, to me, at least right now, project as, like, no doubt about it, NBA draft prospects. Yeah, Quinones is a really good defender, a guy who's kind of a glue guy. And then DeAndre Williams has really showed some developmental prospects the last few years and really asserted himself as one of Memphis's most important players. The three-point shot, you know, last season wasn't great, but you know, he's been pretty good throughout the course of his college career. Really good size, but the athleticism just isn't quite there. And so, you know, but with both of those guys, I think, unlike probably Josh Minot, who I think is true 50-50 and may end up going in the draft, wouldn't be surprised if both of those, DeAndre Williams and Lester Quinones, ended up coming back to school.
Heading into the season, I think some people had Kennedy Chandler, who is from Memphis, played at Tennessee, as a projected lottery pick. Now most people have him somewhere in the 20s. I have him 22. You have him 24. Is that just because he's very, very small relative to NBA or at least high-end NBA point guards, or is there something else that has maybe cost him a realistic opportunity to go in the lottery?
Yeah, I think it's mostly just the size. You know, he's without shoes, he's just under 6 foot tall. He is, in my top 60 rankings, he is the shortest NBA prospect that I have projected. And so, you know, having him in the top 30, I think is pretty significant. And honestly, I think it speaks to the fact that he's been able to overcome the fact that he's a little bit smaller for an NBA starting point guard. He measured out pretty well at the draft combine, had a plus six wingspan, which is really good. He's a guy who's a defender who can kind of get up in your face, uses that length to really affect things on the defensive end. And he's won at every level. You know, won at the college level with Tennessee in an offense under Rick Barnes that, you know, typically over the last few years has really not been too kind for freshman recruits, even for guys like Jaden Springer, a former five-star recruit. So the fact that he was able to kind of take over the starting point guard role at Tennessee as a true freshman, I think speaks to kind of his smarts, his wits as kind of a lead guard. You know, the size, I think, is going to continue to probably keep him outside the lottery projections. But, you know, he tested really well at the NBA draft combine, had a really good leaping vertical. And I think that kind of adds to kind of the mystery and the intrigue surrounding Kennedy Chandler, because not only is he, you know, a little bit smaller in terms of his stature, but he's been able to overcome it with the length and also with the explosiveness. And so this is a draft in particular that's pretty thin on point guards. I think that will also help his case. And so for some of those reasons, I think eventually teams are going to want to take a chance on Kennedy Chandler. Can't imagine that he falls out of the first round in next month's draft.
Wrapping up here with Kyle Boone from CBS Sports. Last thing before I let you go. Name the player who will be drafted outside of the top 10 that in 2 years you'll go, I can't believe that guy went outside of the top 10.
Oh, it's Jeremy Sohan from Baylor, for sure. Sohan is a guy who has been steadily rising up draft boards out of Baylor, 6'9" forward who, you know, at Baylor played on the wing. He played power forward. When they had injuries at the end of the season, he was playing some center. Just a true defensive menace who can legitimately guard like point guards, shooting guards, wings, power forwards, and centers. Really talented playmaker. You know, I think there's some questions with Jeremy Sohan about, you know, what the shot's going to look like. I think he's a good shooter and a good floor spacer, but he hasn't quite proven it, you know, at least not yet. Shot 29.6% from three at Baylor. Early pre-draft workouts, it sounds like he's kind of been hit or miss in terms of his development on the three-point shot. So there's going to be some trepidation, I think, with teams that are picking, you know, inside the top 10 about whether to take him there. if he ends up falling, you know, late lottery or late teens, you know, I think in a few years we're going to look back and be like, wow, we totally overrated the fact that, you know, there were some questions about his shot. His defensive prowess, I think, is transcendent.
That is Kyle Boone from CBS Sports. Make sure you're reading him, CBSSports.com. You find him on Twitter, @Kyle_Boone. Thanks for being here, buddy. I always appreciate your time.
You got it, CP.
All right. That's Kyle Boone from CBS Sports. Jeremy Sohan's an interesting prospect because this is a very rare thing. He was ranked outside of the top 100 in his high school class of 2021. And now most people think is going to be a lottery pick. Even if he goes outside of the top 10, is still projected as a lottery pick. So one and done, ranked outside of your top 100 of your high school class to a lottery pick, that is not usually how this stuff goes. Typically, the one and done lottery picks are guys who are ranked first in their high school class, third in their high school class, seventh in their high school class. The idea that you could be ranked outside of the top 100 and then spend 1 year in college and be a lottery pick, that's not usually the way it goes, but it looks like that's the way it's going to go for Jeremy Sohan out of Baylor. Big thanks to Kyle Boone for being here. Again, you can read him at CBSSports.com. When we come back, just a heartbreaking story out of Texas connected to the elementary school mass murder earlier this week. A father of one of the victims spoke with Anderson Cooper last night in a clip that'll just rip your absolute heart out. We'll get into that next. You listen, Gary Parrish Show, we're on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline, live from the Service Master by Cornerstone Studios. We don't pray for disaster. We just pray we get called when there is one. At Service Master by Cornerstone. Now back to the Gary Parrish Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
You the one, and you stab me in my back again. You the type to play the joke and try to hide your hand. Not the type to come around and try to play your friend. You the type to cut the grass and snake your bestest man. I'm the type to close the deal and cut my... Send me in person, I look like a ghost. Send me in person, I look like a ghost. Boom. You wanna come in and play with the goat? Boom. You wanna come in and play with the goat?
Goat body.
All you rap sound like me. Can't tell who is who. You got no real identity. Can't tell you from you.
Jeff Calkins is an award-winning columnist, Daily Memphian, host of the Jeff Calkins Show. He's going to join me in the next segment a little after 5 o'clock, but right now there's four stories I'd like to discuss.
Four notable stories at 4:44. Gary tends to lose focus, start telling stories, and forget what he wanted to talk about at certain points every afternoon. So we've developed a device that ensures he'll touch on important things you need to know each day at this time. This is GP's Four Notable Stories at 4:44. Story number one.
We continue to learn more about and struggle with the mass murder that happened earlier this week at an elementary school in Texas. And there was just a heartbreaking interview last night between a man named Angel Garza and Anderson Cooper on CNN. Did you happen to see this, Big Bet Bennett?
I did.
So this man, Angel Garza, his daughter is Emery Jo Garza, who coincidentally I had mentioned on yesterday's show because there had been some reporting on how she had been murdered by this 18-year-old gunman who legally purchased an AR-15 and then used it to slaughter 19 children and two teachers. And so last night, Anderson Cooper is talking to this father who is holding a picture of his daughter, and he's talking about her, and he says, you know, I'm a medic, and he was one of the first responders, this man, Angel Garza. And he said there was this little girl, and she was covered in blood and hysterical. Covered in blood and hysterical. And he thought she was hurt. He kept asking her, where are you hurt? Where are you injured? And she said, I'm not injured. I'm not hurt. But they killed my best friend. They shot my best friend, and I'm covered in my best friend's blood. And he said, what's your best friend's name? And she said, Amory. That's how he learned his daughter died.
Dude, the video is honestly, like, one of the worst things I've ever watched. Like, it just crushed, like, as a dad, it crushed me watching that.
what must it be like to respond to that shooting when you know your daughter is in that school and then you're, you know, trying to help just any kid that looks like they need help, and then abruptly you're told your daughter is one of the ones who didn't make it. A fourth grader tells you that her best friend, your daughter, was murdered by this gun owner. And I was going to play the audio, but honestly, like, I can't even deal with it.
No, you know, we can't play that.
Because it's just, I mean, it gets
you. It's heartbreaking, yep.
It gets you. And today we've learned some more about how this apparently went down. And I guess the latest reporting is that the police were on the scene, but not going into the school. They were waiting on a tactical team to get there. And so you have this scene outside of the school where everybody knows there's an active shooter in the school. Parents of these children are at the school, and the police officers are refusing to go into the school because they're waiting on a tactical unit. Which, let me preface everything I'm about to say by acknowledging, I'm sure there's some logic to this. It's hard for me to wrap my head around what it could be, but I'm confident there's somebody who knows more about how to handle these situations than I do who said we need to wait on the tactical team. But my God, do we really?
No, I mean, I watched the video of that too. You know, there's obviously a video circulating of the parents like arguing with the police officers, like begging for them to do something. And there's like a struggle even with one of the parents. But like, I would like to think I would do. I'm just putting myself in those parents' shoes, and like, it's like, I know you can't let them run in the school, but man, like, if I was one of those parents, I would want to get in that school.
Well, apparently parents were trying to get into the school.
Yep.
To try to go get their children out of that school. So you have unarmed parents willing to run in, but armed officers unwilling to run in. That just seems backwards to me.
It does to me too.
And, you know, let me make it clear. I don't know that I'd be brave enough to run into that building unless, of course, my children were in that building. Once you become a parent, it's a bit of a cliche, but once you become a parent, you realize it's also something that's true. You know, you do anything for your kids. You die for your kids.
You die for your kids, yes.
And so if my kids are in that building and there's an active shooter, I'm pretty sure one way or another I do my best to try to get in there to help my kids, to save my kids. But circumstances that fall short of that, I don't know that I'd be willing, brave enough, I'll just put it that, brave enough to run into that type of situation. But you know what? That's why I'm not a police officer. That's why I'm not a law enforcement official. That's why I talk on the radio and on television and on podcast and ranked basketball team, because I'm not brave enough to do that job. But if you're also not brave enough to do that job, maybe you shouldn't be doing that job. And again, I'm certain there are protocols in place, but you've got a school full of children and you know there's an active shooter inside. Seems like you should try to get in there as quickly as possible. The reporting today is that the police were on the scene at 11:45 a.m. and the shooter was not killed until 1 p.m. That shooter was in that room, in that school with those kids for more than an hour. And though the authorities today said they believe most of the children who were murdered very quickly, it almost feels like they're trying to say it wouldn't have mattered that much if we went in immediately because most of the damage, if you will, was done. And perhaps that's true, but how many still alive kids did you leave in that scene for an ungodly amount of time in ways that will traumatize them forever? I mean, imagine you're 8 years old and you're in a room for an hour with your dead shot best friend. That's not ideal, obviously. And by refusing to go in immediately or as quickly as possible, at the very least, that is what the law enforcement officials created earlier this week in Texas. The whole thing's just, again, heartbreaking and confusing and frustrating and maddening, and every new story emphasizes that.
Story number two.
Meantime, the selling of bulletproof backpacks has spiked, at least with one company, roughly 800% in the past couple of days. A bulletproof backpack. Have you looked into bulletproof backpacks, Bennett?
I haven't, but I'm going to be honest with you. Like, if nothing changes in this country, I think I probably will at some point.
They sell for $249.99, and it looks like a normal backpack. But, you know, if some guy legally walks into a store and decides to buy a couple AR-15s and decides he's going to walk into school and shoot up everybody, and you recognize this is happening, you can zip this, zip that, and then slip it over you like a vest, and part of it covers your back, and the other part covers your front, and suddenly you are wearing a bulletproof backpack. Just seems crazy that we have to teach our kids how to put on a bulletproof backpack.
Seems insane.
Maybe there's another way to lessen the risk that they'll get shot at school or anywhere else. Maybe there's maybe instead of going straight to, let's put them in bulletproof backpacks. Maybe let's figure out how to cut down on the school shootings. Because as Jimmy Kimmel's monologue, James Corden's monologue, and as every reasonable and reasonably intelligent person has pointed out over the past couple of days, this stuff doesn't happen in other countries.
No.
It just doesn't. No. It doesn't happen other places. That's why when you see cowards like Ted Cruz try to chalk this up to anything other than the guns.
What a freaking moron.
He's not a moron, though. That's the thing. He's actually a really smart guy.
Yeah, he's an Ivy League graduate. No, you're right. You're right.
He's not a moron. He knows exactly what he's doing. That's why when he was approached by the reporter from Sky News, he had to walk away. That's why he couldn't sit there and answer the questions, because there's no good answers, and he knows that.
You know, like when we're sitting here talking about doors, I'm just like, that's when I can't listen to you. I cannot listen to your perspective.
You know, when it's a simple question, Senator Cruz, if this isn't about guns, if guns aren't the problem, why does this only happen here? Why doesn't this happen in other places with stricter gun laws? Why does this only happen in this country? Why is it a uniquely American problem? And he has to walk away. He has to be dismissive of the question asker and then walk away. Why? Because he knows there's nothing he can say. There's nothing he can say. Because there is absolutely no intelligent argument that doesn't include the real problem here is guns. I won't listen to any other argument because they're nonsensical. Every country has mental health problems. Every country has video games. Every country has the internet. Every country has TikTok. Yep. And they don't have these problems. The only difference between our country and those countries is we got way more guns than them, and they're really easy to get. That's it. And you see somebody like Ted Cruz try to talk around that. And, like, literally, there's millions of Americans who try to talk around that. It's just absolutely infuriating that the answer is we've got to get.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.